What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Jesse Strauss. As Israel has continued its attacks on starving Palestinians who are seeking aid in Gaza, the humanitarian aid flotilla that had been set to arrive from its journey across the Mediterranean Sea bringing a small amount of basic support was captured early this morning by Israeli state piracy forces. The 12 humanitarian activists aboard that vessel from all around the world were kidnapped and brought as hostages to the Israeli port of Ashdod. Well over 600 days now, the Zionist war of ethnic cleansing in Gaza continues. Today we return to our recurring segment, The Palestine Post. We're joined by Nora Barrows-Friedman, editor and journalist with the Electronic Intifada, which also just launched a new KPFA program airing Tuesdays at 11 a.m. This launch makes Nora both a former KPFA host and producer and also a renewed KPFA host and producer. Welcome back to the show, Nora Barrows-Friedman.
Thanks so much, Jesse. Every time I try to escape KPFA, it just pulls me back in.
Oh, I'm right there with you. So I want to start this morning's conversation with some discussion about the flotilla. It was just captured by, like I mentioned, Israeli state piracy forces early this morning. The Israeli defense minister, Israel Katz, wrote on Twitter before the capture that once flotilla activists were kidnapped, that he had instructed the military to force those prisoners to watch videos of the Hamas attacks that took place on October 7, 2023. Nora, since this is breaking news today, what's the latest that you're aware of about the aid flotilla and its activist passengers, and what do we know about the boat's capture?
Well, we don't know much because, you know, everyone around the world was watching the Madeleine boat, you know, traversing through the Mediterranean Sea for the last, I don't know, almost six days or so. And last night at about 6:30 p.m., the Madeleine lost communication, and some photos and very short kind of blips of videos came out from the people aboard the ship itself, showing that the Israeli Navy had sprayed some sort of substance on the boat, probably for tracking, because it was like very, very early in the morning. And then they had like encircled it with drones, and then they boarded the boat illegally in international waters. This was not anywhere near, you know, I mean, it's also not even Israel's to say that it is Israeli waters. It's Palestine's waters. And Palestinians were had invited people from all over the world to come and try to break the siege, the illegal siege that Israel has imposed, not just for the last 20 months as it has enacted this genocide, but for the last 18 years on Gaza. So they commandeered the boat. They arrested all the activists. They made some, you know, public displays of, you know, kind of propaganda in which they, you know, told all the activists on board that that they were finally safe and they were given sandwiches and water, as though that's what the act. It's all just insane. And then they were arrested, and the boat, I believe, is being towed to Ashdod. And as you said, the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I believe, announced this morning that all the activists that were arrested, kidnapped basically by the Israeli Navy, are being forced to watch some propaganda film about October 7th. Again, they live in their own reality, the Israeli government and most of the people there. They believe that, you know, if they show propaganda video that no one else has seen, with, you know, supposedly evidence of, you know, atrocities that took place at the hands of Palestinians on October 7th, that magically people will forget about the 20 months of absolute slaughter, incessant genocidal slaughter, that tens of thousands of children have been killed, more have been injured for life. People are on month three now of starving completely. And they think that by showing some propaganda video that they made that they won't release to the public, that'll change people's minds. It's ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah. You mentioned that Israeli forces boarded the boat illegally in international waters.
Yes.
Is there anything at this point to make of the impunity that Israel seems to receive in the international arena? I mean, my understanding, if any other state boarded a boat to capture humanitarian nonviolent aid activists in international waters outside their, even if it were outside their land area, this would be met with condemnation internationally. What is the UN or other nations around the world saying about this?
That's absolutely right, Jesse. The UN itself haven't checked yet to see what it has said, but you know, people like UN officials like Francesca Albanese, who's the spokesperson for the rights of people in occupied Palestine, was tracking the boat and was on, you know, in direct communication with people on the boat the whole time. And, you know, she was upholding the tenets of what's left of international law at this point, saying that Israel has no right to commandeer and take over and kidnap people on a boat in international waters. I mean, that's just basic maritime law. Of course, Israel has never recognized international law when it comes to their own, you know, their own designs, their own plans on Palestinians and people coming to stand in solidarity with Palestinians.
International law seems to recognize Israel back either.
Yeah, I mean, if international law had any enforcement mechanism, you know, Israel would be at The Hague already. And not just for the last 20 months of genocide, but for, you know, the 25 years now of its illegal wall in the occupied West Bank. In 2004, so I guess 21 years, in 2004, the International Court of Justice at The Hague ruled that Israel's wall was illegal and against international law and the Geneva Conventions. And nothing was done about it. The siege that began on Gaza in 2007 has been shown to be in violation of numerous international and humanitarian laws. And that has been ongoing. And now 20 months of siege. You know, Palestinians always say they can't eat condemnations. No matter how many, you know, declarations and announcements that international bodies, either, you know, like the UN General Assembly or the Security Council make, or, you know, Western governments, you know, now we have supposedly the president of France being very upset about what's happening in Palestine, but of course, you know, doing nothing to stop France's ties with the Israeli weapons manufacturing industry or anything. Those condemnations, those, you know, announcements, those declarations are ineffective at best, and pernicious and dangerous at worst, because it keeps allowing the Zionist government and its U.S. enablers to continue slaughtering Palestinians in broad daylight, to continue preventing people from around the world from standing in solidarity and trying to break this depraved siege. And so what we really need is someone, some government with actual, you know, leverage of power to stop what's happening. And if that's not going to happen, then people power is the only thing that's going to stop it. Right now, there's a caravan being assembled in North Africa that's going to travel all the way and aiming to reach Rafah in southern Gaza. Rafah is basically 95% destroyed. I mean, it is completely, Israel has completely wiped it off the map. Again, while the whole world has been watching, we'll see what happens with the caravan. But and people, you know, are saying that there's going to be another bigger flotilla of ships coming to break the siege. That's what's going to happen, as well as, you know, organizations like the Palestinian Youth Movement, which is mobilizing activists all over the world. In major port cities to stop the weapons flow through the shipping company Maersk. Maersk is like ubiquitous. We see it all over the Bay Area. It is the major logistics company to bring weapons and weapons parts, specifically the F-35 warplane parts to the Israeli military. And if we can stop those ships from being unloaded or loaded at various ports around the world, we can put a major wrench in the gears of this war machine. And it's not going to come from people in power who have vested interest in keeping this genocide going. It's going to come from the bottom up.
And you mentioned already that there is a caravan of humanitarian activists. I believe they are also bringing material aid or attempting to, but certainly trying to break the siege on Gaza from the land. Now we have a group of activists trying to break the siege by sea. We have a group of activists trying to break the siege by land. And I'm aware that there are some activists, even locally from the Bay Area here, who are on their way to join that land caravan to try to break the siege. Nora, at this point, I mean, we can clearly see, as you just described, that having much expectation or faith in the international legal community to hold Israel accountable might be a failed idea. How do you see this strategy of challenging the siege from individual humanitarian activists? Are we really going to be able to impact the international community? I mean, my understanding is that many people of conscience around the world don't need much more convincing. We've already seen enough children being assassinated. We've already seen enough starving people waiting in lines for aid being shot, that we don't need to be convinced that the siege itself, which dates long before this genocide began. What do you see in best case of the impact of these efforts to break the siege by sea and air, sea and land?
Yeah, hopefully air will come soon. The impact is, I think, multifold. I agree. People don't need any more convincing of Israel's crimes and the crimes against humanity and the enabling of those crimes and the profiting off of those crimes by Western governments, specifically the U.S. and Canada and the U.K. and European states. What's needed now is action. Like, we know what's going on. We know the things that I know. I wish I didn't know. I wish I didn't know what the inside of a child's skull looked like. But we know these things now because Israel has done that to children over and over and over again for 612 days. So we know what's happening. Now is the time for action. And what that, you know, those actions mean, one, this is what solidarity really looks like. When Palestinians were waiting at the shore for the Madleen boat, for one boat, They knew, you know, everyone knew, it was very predictable because Israel has done this over and over again, that Israel was going to, you know, hijack the boat and kidnap the people on board in international waters and tow it to one of their ports. But the very fact that people from the West were saying, we will do whatever we can with whatever we have to try and reach you. You are not alone. We are with you. The whole world is with you. I think that is a huge measure of solidarity with Palestinians, that Palestinians need to keep seeing over and over and over again. No matter, you know, if you're not able to get a boat and try and sail to Gaza, there are so many other ways that people can stand in solidarity. There are so many campaigns and mutual aid organizations on the ground in Gaza. There are ways to get involved in that way. And the other, I think the other way that kind of solidarity impacts the situation in Palestine is that, you know, what's the phrase, a million drops can fill a bucket of water, you know, a million drops of water can fill a bucket, whatever. It's 8:25 a.m. I haven't had my coffee yet. And that means that, every single action, no matter how small, is part of a larger sum of its, altogether. If there are millions and millions and millions of people taking these small actions, what that does in essence is chip away at Israel's ability to do this with any, international, civil society support at all. What it does is further isolate Israel and further push it into pariah status and rogue state status, which it has been for the last 80 years, but even more so, where Israel has to be isolated politically, economically, and I think that millions of people doing millions of tiny things all together makes an incredible impact. And so these caravans, these marches, these flotillas, I think we're going to see more and more people be inspired. I mean, if 15,000 boats sailed from, southern Europe across the Mediterranean Sea, the Israeli Navy doesn't have the manpower to commandeer all of them. It's a matter of setting a precedent and standing in solidarity however you can and chipping away at Israel's impunity one by one.
And that's the voice of Nora Barrows Friedman, editor and journalist with the Electronic Intifada. Nora, we just have a few minutes left, but I want to talk a little bit about what's happening on the ground in Gaza. You wrote a piece just a few days ago for the Electronic Intifada about the weaponization of aid. Now, even that phrase that I just said sounds confusing because aid in itself is not a weapon. I wanted to ask you about that, but also add to the conversation that last week Benjamin Netanyahu named a Christian evangelical leader as the new director of the Gaza Aid Fund. Reverend Johnny Moore is a controversial American pastor and political strategist who has close ties to both Donald Trump and Israel's far-right leadership. The group he's now leading is operating with Israeli approval and widely criticized for its complicity in politicizing and militarizing aid in Gaza. If we're looking at the ground in Gaza, what's the current desperate need for aid? Where do we see that impacting folks? I mean, I mentioned earlier, we've seen horrific images of folks waiting in line to receive basic life-saving aid, just food, and being attacked in that process. As aid becomes politicized, how do you understand aid being used as a weapon against Gazans?
I mean, I stare at my computer screen or I stare at my phone with, you know, texts coming in from friends and colleagues in Gaza. And I don't know what I'm watching. I don't know what I'm reading. It doesn't make any sense in reality, because yeah, as you said, this very shadowy organization called the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, right? Like, how cynical can that be? Opened up in place of Israel allowing international, it's not Israeli aid that's coming in, it's international agencies that have brought aid to Gaza for the last, you know, ever since Gaza was sealed off from the world in 2007. And its own, economic infrastructure was destroyed, and its agriculture industry was destroyed, and factories, local factories were decimated. The airport, there used to be an airport in Gaza that was destroyed by the Israelis. They have engineered a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza, not just in the last 20 months, which is, I think, the zenith of this humanitarian catastrophe, but over the last 20 years and over the last 70 years of occupation and ethnic cleansing. And so, you know, the bare minimum required for 2 million Palestinians in Gaza was 500 trucks a day. That was before October 7th. 500 trucks a day, including baby formula, bandages, antibiotics, notebooks for school children, wheelchairs, construction equipment, medications, dialysis machines and equipment, you name it. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of medications that were banned and items that were banned from entering Gaza, because again, the Israelis were, like the Israeli official Dov Weisglass said, I think in 2008, Palestinians have to be put on a diet. So Israel was controlling the amount of aid, the kind of aid that was coming in. Again, it's not theirs to control as the occupier. This is against Geneva Conventions. Again, we can go back to the violations of international law. And for the last 20 months, Israel has tightened the crossings so sadistically that those 500 trucks, dip down sometimes to 12 a day. And then, they would go up again a little bit and then back down. And then since March 2nd, Israel has sealed the crossings altogether, 100%. Nothing coming in, nothing going out. Now 2 million people are starving. There is what Dr. Mm-hmm. Munir al-Bursh, the director general of the health ministry in Gaza, said: this is the final stage of famine. This is mass death. It is absolutely unbelievable what Palestinians are now being subjected to. This Gaza Humanitarian Foundation suddenly popped up with offices in Switzerland and Delaware. That's where they're legally documented as registered, I guess. It turns out, I think the BBC went over the weekend to the address listed on the registration for the organization's headquarters in Delaware and found literally an empty building. I mean, you can't make this up, right? Straight out of some movie about evil people doing evil things. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation was set up with American mercenaries at 4 aid points across Gaza in already militarized no-go zones to feed, ostensibly feed 2 million people. And every single day that this scheme has opened for the last, 10 or so days, Palestinians have been mowed down by snipers, tanks, armed quadcopter drones. They've turned these so-called aid points into killing fields. The director of the Gaza media office called it a slaughterhouse. People go, they're so desperate, they haven't eaten in weeks. They go to find, you know, to find a crumble of food for their starving children, and they come back in a shroud. It is absolutely unconscionable what we're seeing. And this weaponization of aid is the tip of the iceberg in terms of Israel's violations of all laws on the books.
So, Nora, we're going to have to end it there. Thank you so much for joining us. But I want to make sure listeners know that if they want to hear more from you, which I assume many do, the Electronic Intifada is launching a radio show here on KPFA at Tuesdays at 11 a.m. I'm wondering if you can just give us like a 20-second brief of what listeners can expect from the new radio show that you're launching.
Thank you. Yes. We launched last week was our first episode. And tomorrow at 11 is our second episode. And these are basically just kind of a condensed version of our Thursday live broadcasts with some new information and some new items to check out as well. Lots of news analysis. We have, discussions about what's going on in Palestine on the ground. We have contributors on the ground in Gaza, if they're able to connect. We have interviews with them. And so please check it out. It's wonderful. And I'm so grateful for the KPFA community to welcome us back.
And you can also check out their work at electronicintifada.net. Nora, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Jesse.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a world where all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is co-hosted by me, Jesse Strauss, and Kat Brooks, and produced by me as well. Our show theme music is from Steve Raskin. Feel free to hit us up about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media. That's at lawanddis, and subscribe wherever you stream podcasts by searching for Law and Disorder with Kat Brooks. You can also find our content live on KPFA Radio or streaming at kpfa.org in the 8 a.m. Pacific hour, Mondays through Thursdays. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by listeners, and if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.